Treasures Radio Network, the voice of the 3%, is now on the air.
Kick your ass, I could jack your jaw, put you flat in the dirt, boy, yeah, I'd have a ball, so go ahead and act tough, like your John Wayne son, but things can change fast.
Mr. President, members of Congress, you've been making a lot of noise about taking our guns away. But you might want to review history. 1835, Gonzales, Texas Territory. The authorities wanted to confiscate the big gun that protected that colony. You know what the people said? Come and take it. Because they were willing to fight for their freedom and their guns. So are we.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to fight it from my cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time, just like Gonzales. We're keeping our guns.
The lights and the harbor.
The Liberty Lounge, brought to you every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time here on Just Measures Radio Network. Listen to classic country music in the Liberty Lounge to help you end your week on a pleasant note. We'll have sad songs.
I go out walking after midnight.
Happy songs.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
Patriotic songs.
There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere in a distant land so many miles.
Songs of tragedy.
Two little boys and an old family dog. By the banks of a stream said one day.
Love songs.
Welcome to my world.
And good old honky-tonk music.
I'm a honky-tonk man. And I can't seem to stop.
So join me every Friday night and just let your hair down for a couple of hours here on Liberty Lounge.
Yeah, my only hope was Betty Lou. She was the one. A combination AK-57 Uzi Raider laser triple barrel double scoped heat seeking shotgun.
Nobody knew where he came from. They only knew he came in.
Uh-oh. Here he comes again. Here's Cope with the shooting bench.
I still remember these words. Oh, it's plain that you're looking for trouble. Trouble's what I try to shun. If that's what you want, then that's what you'll get. Cause cowboy, we're both packing guns.
You know what's good for you. Stay tuned for 100% Gun Talk, coming up right now.
44 spoke, and he sent lead and smoke. 17 inches of flame. Oh, the big one had never cleared leather. Beaten before he could start. A little round hole had appeared on his shirt. The bullet went clear through his heart.
The views expressed in the following broadcast are not necessarily those of Just Measures Radio or the owners or sponsors thereof. Any and all mention of laws, ordinances, or policies are not to be construed as legal advice or necessarily all-inclusive. The listener bears all responsibility in verifying this information. Be advised that this broadcast may be inflammatory to those with thin skin, lymph wrists, and room temperature IQs. Furthermore, the statements expressed by the host may contain information known to the state of California to inspire free thinking and may promote unexpected growth of testicles and backbone. Listener discretion is advised.
It's Thursday. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's the all gun-related version, or pretty much anyway. We're going to drift off a little bit tonight. We are waiting for Drum Jaw in a little bit. He's going to be about 10 or 15 minutes late. But the problem is, I don't know if this Skype is working right yet. The Skype test call says that it's working, but when I try to call it, I don't hear it ringing. So we'll have to see what happens. And Doc, Mountain Shooter, who else we got in here? Let me check and see. There's Gauntlet. Let's see. Desert Rat, DeTinker. Let's see. Mini, Mother Earth, Mountain Shooter, Northwest Heavy, Peanut Rider, Rights at Risk, couple of Anonymous. All right. And still coming in. All right. Remind you to go to our newest website, which is, what is my newest website? TheShootingBench.us. I got a Shooting Bench, all kinds of stuff. We got the shootingbench.us, which is a website with an online store on there with just a few of the basic things that we, it's not very big at all, but it's very effective, works very well. And then, hold on just a minute. And the shootingbench.info, which is a blog, and the shootingbench.yuku.com, which is a forum, a message board, whatever you want to call it. And what else we got? That's all I can think of right off the top of my head. Got a Shooting Bench, everything. The only thing we don't have is a shootingbench.com. That's okay. We don't want a shootingbench.com. So, let's see. Mini Desert Rat, everybody's climbing in here. I found a good story tonight, and we're going to go over it just a little bit, and that is about the whether you shoot to wound, shoot to kill, shoot to stop, and what the difference of those is. Now, it's oddly enough, it's not going to be anything different than what I've told you before. Just confirms it, I guess, from another source. We're waiting patiently for Drumjaw to come in here. He's going to remember last night we talked about the shooting the suicide, the guy that's about to commit suicide. Don't you kill yourself or I'll kill you. Matter of fact, let me kill you before you can kill yourself. So I never did quite understand that whole thing. I do understand if he's about to kill himself that he and points a weapon at one of the officers, then yeah, I get that. I don't have a problem with that. But that hasn't been the case in several of these most recent stories here. Mountain Shooter, are you talking about CS? You're talking about colloidal silver. That would be, well, we have something on all of them. There's a bunch of silver information on the shootingbench.info and the shootingbench.yuku.com. But if you want to order something, it'll be on the shootingbench.us. And there's a tab in there that says products, and that's where the store is. I may change that name of that, but you can find everything you always wanted to know about colloidal silver, but we're afraid to ask. You guys remember that movie years and years ago? Everything you always want to know about sex, but we're afraid to ask. Yeah, it hasn't been on for a while. It was probably back in the 60s, early 70s, something like that. Yeah, Mountain Shooter, you're right. Yeah, stop the threat. That's exactly what this story here confirms. So, and I've got to, if this Skype works, is the Tinker in here yet tonight? He seems to be pretty up to date on this. Now, I don't know why I've had problem with it. Matter of fact, let me see right here, right now, as everybody is my witness. Let me call in to myself and see if we hear it ringing. If we do, it should be one ringy dingy. No, we won't even go there. I don't see it. and I don't hear it. So something is not working. Okay, I'm still waiting very patiently. And I don't see anything or hear anything. So I don't know. It's not working on, at least not with my phone. So I don't know, this card, everything else is working normally, perfectly. Let's see here. Somebody give me a call out there and let me see if it goes through. Maybe it's something on my end. Call that 817 number. Just call and say hi. How you doing? See if this has worked before Drum Jaw gets here. He should be coming in just any time now. I guess. I'm assuming that you can hear me. For anybody that's just come in tonight from other sources, if it's the first time, they're gonna leave pretty quick, because this is a very screwed up show here. But we're trying to get Skype to work. And in the process of that, it's not going to be okay. Drum Jaw, don't go ahead and try to call. I don't know if it's going to work. Let me know what you get. Call that number right above there, and let's see what happens when you call that. Everything should be working. Make sure Skype is off on my phone and doesn't mess that up. Well, it wouldn't matter, because that's not. All right, and we're waiting. And I'm not seeing or hearing anything. All right, somebody get the tinker. Maybe he knows what's going on here. Doc, maybe you know. It's not working, though, whatever it may be. And I so wanted this to work tonight. It may be in my sound card, but I don't think so, because everything else seems to be working okay. All of the sounds, all of the songs, all of the everything, ads, everything is working fine. So let's see here. Let's see, let me try that number on Skype. Yeah, maybe that would do it. Doc, Drum Jaw, I don't know if you have Skype or not. That may be what it is. Because I haven't tried from another Skype number. I've tried my phone, and it didn't come through, and I don't know why that would be. But possibly it'll come through on Skype. Drum Jaw, I don't know if you have Skype or not. But apparently, it may not matter, because I don't see Doc coming in here yet either. And I'm actually on the JMR Skype. Yeah, take your time, Drum Jaw. That's okay. We got 2 hours here. At least we got until I run out of things to talk about. And I know Mountain Shooter's sitting there just wishing we'd hurry the hell up to start talking about gun stuff. So I'm going to sit here and let y'all work that out. Drum Jaw, you see if you can get Skype up and running. And we'll try that. So in the meantime, there's a story here that, now I don't know how credible this is or where this guy got his information, but it very much coincides with mine. And you get we get the same thing, and I've said this so many times. When there's a shoot, somebody's involved in a shoot, or they would talk about being involved in a shooting. Most of them have not been involved, but they talk a lot of crap. And now hang on here. All right, how about it, Doc? Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Outstanding. I still never heard it ring, but I did see it. I just saw it come on. So that's
now the first time I tried the 812 number. I only got the recording that the person you're trying to reach is not available.
Okay. That is, stand by here. So what did you try, the 877 number?
I honestly don't know, Cope. I just hit the bookmark for the JMR Radio Network number. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure what the number is.
Okay.
But when I tried the JMR Network number, it came through.
All righty. Well, how are you doing tonight anyway, since we've got you on the line?
I am well.
How's our project coming along?
Our project is coming along fine. It actually works. It's completely functional. I just need to pretty it up because at this stage it looks like what it is, which is an ugly, partially finished prototype.
Well, I'm sure anxious to try that out. That's going to be cool. My mountain shooter's wondering. He's got his we got his curiosity up here. So you've already heard about all you're going to hear for right now, mountain shooter, until I get to check it out. But I'm anxious to do that. I think it's going to be cool.
Well, it needs more of what they call in the auto industry curb appeal. I've really just got to pretty it up.
All right. Well, when you get her done, give me a holler. I'm sure looking forward to that.
Okay. I see Drumjaw is downloading Skype to his iPhone now, so hopefully he'll be able to contact you soon.
Yeah. No rush, Drumjaw. We'll find something to talk about here for a little while. All right.
You know, I do have a little update for you, Cope.
What's that?
And for the listeners regarding 22 availability.
Ah.
As many folks know, I'm in South Central Mississippi, about 50 miles off of the Gulf Coast. And the last show I went to was in Laurel, Mississippi. And 22 prices are not only coming down, but availability was greatly increased. In most parts of the country, from what I gather from the boards, 22 has been selling for around $75 for a brick of 500 to 550.
That's probably about the average, yeah.
Right. At the last show, it was selling for an average of around $50 a brick, and there was a lot more of it on the dealer's tables.
Well, that's still way too high, but it's a whole lot cheaper than it was a year ago.
I'm going to hit one or two shows this coming weekend, and if you'd like, I'll call in next Thursday and give you another update.
Certainly, that'd be great. We haven't seen 22 shells here for, geez, I don't know how long it's been. Once in a great while, Walmart will get a little bit in, but if you're not standing in Walmart in line at 7 o'clock, 7:30, you have no possibility of getting any. The people are waiting there for it when the trucks come in, and they're waiting for anything that's on the truck, and it's all gone. It's all dried up by 7:30, 8 o'clock.
I haven't seen any in the retail outlets here for about 2 years, but it has always been available at the gun shows if you're willing to pay exorbitant prices, which, of course, I'm not.
Yeah, of course, they saw a lot of this coming, and we did too. I mean, we bought, you know, cases and cases and cases. I wish I'd have been able to buy a couple of pallets, but we bought a lot of it, seeing what was happening. But it didn't last long because we didn't jack our prices up nearly to what everybody else was doing. You know, cheaper than dirt. You might have been listening when I posted that picture online. Cheaper than dirt had it there for a while. Plain old Federal. Nothing special about it. It wasn't Target. It wasn't anything. It was just plain old 22 shells. $149.59 for a 550 round brick.
Right, and you know, as I've said on your show and in the on the boards many times, for a long time now, it's been cheaper for me to shoot centerfire reloads, assuming I was using lead bullets, than it is to shoot 22.
Yep. Yep, that's a fact. And a lot of people don't realize how much cheaper that is if you get into some lead bullets. You know, you can take just take an old 30-30, especially a Winchester that doesn't have the microgroove rifling. If you've got microgroove, you need to be a little bit more careful or use gas checks, one or the other. But, hell, you can shoot 30-30s for as long as you've already got the brass. What does it cost you to shoot those 15 cents a piece or something like that?
Oh, if I cast my own bullets, and let's assume I'm getting the lead for little or nothing, I can pretty much reload most centerfire rounds for around a nickel apiece.
Well,
now that's at the cheap end. If I want to spend a little more, use a little more expensive powders and such, and if I've got to buy expensive primers, because remember, primers, much like 22, were unavailable for a long time.
Yep, and they were $75 and $100 a carton too.
Exactly. So, you know, fortunately, I have a lot of primers put away, and I've never had to pay more than $20 or $25 a thousand, 25 tops. Mm-hmm. For primers, but assuming we're talking about normal prices, and primer prices have come down considerably. They're not anywhere near what they were, and they came down, a year ago. Primer prices started to drop. They were usually $17 or $18 per thousand. Then they got stupid, $75, $80 per thousand during the height of the shortage. Now they're generally back to $23 or $25 per thousand, which...
That's not great,
it's palatable. But, you know, as you well know, when you reload, the most expensive component is going to be a premium hunting bullet.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, when the primer started going down and the powder and everything else, you know, what was once $18.95 and then got up to $150, when we see it get down to $30, we get all excited. But it's just like gasoline, I guess. We pay $4 a gallon long enough, and then it goes down to $3.50 when it was $2.75 before the big crunch. Then we get excited about it.
I'm the king of the bargain hunters, Cope. People on our station have heard me talk about buying secondhand and looking for bargains many times. And believe me, I apply that as much to shooting supplies as I do to anything else. So
you
can save a lot of money if you scour estate sales, yard sales, garage sales, and even some of the closeouts at the gun shows. I've picked up bullets. I picked up, what was it? I think it was 20,000 38 special 147 grain wad cutter target bullets, 20,000 of them now. And for $15 per thousand.
Wow.
And it was an estate sale. It was someone looking to get rid of this. And, you know, I mean, that sounds like it's an extremely cheap price, which it is. But it also required somebody at that time and at that place with cash and at least a half-ton pickup who was willing to crawl underneath a large bench and move, I don't know what it was, 50 boxes of bullets. Which took the better part of an afternoon.
Yeah. So,
but, you know, if you look for bargains like that, you can shoot very inexpensively.
Yep, I agree. That you take something like a 30-30 or 30 carbine, even your 223s and stuff, you can load those down to 22 Magnum velocities or even less and shoot those for way cheaper than 22s, even when they're the normal price.
Sure. I really don't like reloading 223. I own a couple of 223s. I don't dislike the caliber. If you use it within its limitations, it's a fine little caliber, but it's not a 30 caliber main battle rifle substitute, in my opinion.
Nope, I agree.
But I don't like reloading the darn things. They're just too tiny, and I'm probably getting too old to want to mess with those little 50-grain bullets and those little minuscule cases.
Yeah, I like the boat-tail bullets a whole lot better if I'm going to load 22s. One thing I don't see how people do, though, is load the 17s. I don't know how in the world that's worth your time and effort.
No, I can't see that either. I do have a 17, but it's not a center fire. I've got a 17 HMR.
Yeah.
And, you know, of late, 17 HMR, I didn't even need the rifle. I bought it from a neighbor who needed a little cash more than he needed that rifle. And it's a little savage. It's a fine shooting little rifle.
You bet they are.
Its utility is less than even the 223, though. But I will say this much for the 17 HMR. For the 2 years we've been in this, what we'll call a 22 long rifle drought, 17 HMR has been pretty much available whenever you needed it.
Yeah, it kind of lost, didn't have the romance that it had, and it's, you know, there for a while it was kind of hard to find because people loved it. It was an awesome, accurate caliber, but I think it's kind of fell from favor, so it's usually available because it's not quite as popular as it once was. People learned that it's a little different. Everybody was all excited about it for 3 or 4 years there, and then it kind of took a back seat. That was when the 22 Magnum came out with, you know, 5 or 6 different weights and styles of bullets, and the TNTs and the little polymer tipped bullets and stuff. So that became a good competition for the HMR.
Well, in essence, the 17 HMR is a neck down 22 mag,
and basically, yeah.
You know, as I've heard you say many times, you're a big fan of the 22 mag.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think there's a whole lot that 17 can do that the 22 mag can't.
Yeah, and the energy of the 22 mag is so much more by having the extra weight and the added diameter, and so they've made some of those bullets quite a bit lighter to give them more speed, but they're still heavier than the HMR and bigger in diameter, which gives them a whole lot more oomph when it gets out to the target. You don't very often lose a prairie dog to a 22 Magnum. I lost a few of them to the 17 HMR, much to my surprise. But that 22 Magnum, you're not likely to lose one.
But, yeah, like I said, the 17 is a fun little rifle. It's very accurate. And ammunition, at least at the gun shows, has been consistently available, generally for around $14 for 50 rounds. That's pretty much been the average going rate.
Yeah, that's not too bad. For an HMR, that's not. Now, I had that little Ruger for a while. The Ruger, 17, whatever Ruger's number is, but and it was a shooter, man. When I smoothed that trigger up on it and tried to make a half-ass attempt at fire lapping the bore a little bit, but man, that thing would shoot. Jeez. But it just didn't have the poop when it got there. It was unimpressive after a while. We was all infatuated with it for a bit. And then during the time that I had that is when the 22 Magnum started making so many changes in their bullet weights and stuff. So that was the end of this 17 HMR for me.
I see Drumjaw just posted in chat that his download is about halfway done. So if you want me to stay on the line with you on what we might call an extended comm check, I'm happy to cope. Or if you want to cut me loose, for when Drumjaw is ready to call in, just give me the word.
Well, you've always got good stuff to talk about. So if you want to lead us through this perilous time here while we're waiting on Drumjaw to get squared away there, well, if you've got something to share with us, feel free.
My God, it is a perilous time, isn't it?
Oh, man.
Everything from the heightened tensions with the Russians to the current Ebola scare.
Enterovirus. And add that to what we already had with the illegal immigration and the illegal immigration into the White House.
We have any number of stressors on the system, and really, in my view, it's just a matter of sitting back and waiting to see what breaks.
Yeah, and it's what I'm afraid of is there's going to be when one thing happens, I think that it's going to be followed by one, two, three more. When the main catalyst, whatever it may be, I think it's going to draw other events into it. Almost simultaneously. Let's say if the for instance if the economy collapses and everything quits working, what all's going to happen the next day? It ain't going to be all about the economy. That's going to start it, but there's going to be more.
No, there will be endless collateral effects. And those collateral effects will doubtlessly be more dangerous than the actual event itself that causes it, the triggering event.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I see in chat, Drumjaw said, well, there's an app. I hope it works. So if you're not getting an audible signal, you might want to keep an eye on your screen to see if Drumjaw is trying to call in. And as soon as you see that code, let me know, and I'm just going to sign off so you don't have any interference trying to get his call.
Okay. All right. It shouldn't make any difference. But anyway, I haven't talked to you for a long time, and you're very professional and unbiased opinion here. What are you looking at for a... I know it's a stupid question, but everybody asks me that all the time. What are you looking at for a timeline right now? Anywhere from a month, 6 months, year, 5 years?
Everyone asks me that, too, and I probably don't have any better answers than you. Like I said, there are so many stressors on the system right now that my crystal ball is basically broken. I'm just not going to pretend to be able to offer a timeline. I've heard, and I'm sure you have too, any number of people in the prep community do that over the years, and invariably they're wrong. When I've tried to do it, invariably I've been wrong. I get the long-term trends right, but I don't get the timing right.
Right.
And so I'm at the point I don't trust anyone who tries to give us a timeline because, I think it's borderline irresponsible. You know, I'm sure you've heard the old dynamic where the guy says, oh, I'm going to go max out my credit cards when I think we're at the end because I'll never have to pay it back.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just going to buy prep supplies, max out the credit cards, right? And how many of those fools are now paying ungodly credit card bills or driven themselves into bankruptcy from such an irresponsible strategy?
Yep, I saw lots of people have borrowed money and run their credit cards up and doing all this, quitting their jobs and buying land, moving, you know, relocating and doing all this stuff, then to find out that, you know, it's a year, 2 years, 5 years later and nothing's significantly different. Yeah.
Sure, and most of those things are good to do. Buying land, buying extra food, maybe quitting or changing your job. That's, you know, those are all well and good, but I think they have to be done with a more calculated and mature approach rather than just throwing caution to the winds and going out and buying all this stuff and finding yourself in a bad position.
Yeah, and just be smart about it.
You know, my personal journey has involved moving and changing employment and modifying finances, but none of it was done overnight. You know, in my case, it was just like yourself. You've moved several times. It's a process. You go through this over a period of years, not a period of minutes or hours.
Right. Yep, I have moved many times over the years. I think I've been in, I've said it before, 36 states and 8 countries, you know. And in those states, I've moved probably, I've probably moved at least a dozen times within the state of Texas. I've already moved 3 times in, I haven't, just twice in Arizona. So.
And I'm sure you've seen those maps advising people as to the best retreat locations or the best bug out locations.
Sure.
And by and large, I don't put any stock in that. I mean, it's Murphy's Law. You're going to go buy 40 acres in the quote-unquote ideal survival location, and that's where the asteroid lands. I mean, you know, you've got to have some practical parameters, some realistic expectations of what you're getting into.
Yeah.
And no places to cope. I mean, you've lived in enough places to know that. If you get out of the flood zone, you might wind up in the tornado zone. You know, get out of the tornado zone, you might wind up in the earthquake zone.
Mm-hmm.
Every place on Earth has its assets and its liabilities.
Yeah, and there's...
I don't think we're going to find the perfect place on this Earth. We may find it in the afterlife if we're lucky.
Yeah, there's maybe some better than others, but everything is going to have a downside of some kind, you know, no matter where you go. You know, Wyoming is pretty nice, but if the grid goes down, you better damn well be prepared for, you know, sub-zero temperatures for months on end, heavy snows, high winds, you know, in a purely poop-hit-the-fan situation. That's not the best place to live.
Yeah. Cope, as we speak, I have a friend in Wyoming who is in a relatively small travel trailer, and I spoke to him recently. He is in a lather right now because he doesn't think he's going to be prepared for winter. So, yeah, nice area, sure, but, you know, travel trailer being stuck with limited funds in Wyoming, I don't think that's a good position to be in.
I tell you, I was in, that was in Montana, but I'll finish the story anyway. It's the only place I've ever seen. I had a bottle of black velvet sitting on a table inside a travel trailer, and it gelled in that travel trailer. It wasn't solid, but it gelled. It got pretty thick. It was.
You had black velvet slush.
Yeah. Yeah, and that stuff, you drink something like that, and it'll kill you. It's something that's, 54 below zero, and you toss down a shot of it, it's going to be bad news. Yeah.
Well, that's one of my pet peeves, and people to the north should pay especially close attention to this, because not only are brothers to the north, the entire society is so dependent on grid power. This goes back to the collateral effects. Even if you're prepared with your own heat and such, nobody else will be. But if we ever do have a grid down scenario, like Dr. Forstner explained in 1 Second After, especially if it happens in the winter, I think the northern states will just be one giant killing field. People don't realize how many people are packed into high rise, dense apartments and other structures that are just absolutely dependent on everything working right. Well, what happens when the day comes when it doesn't?
Well, it's like, 125 years ago, there were still people living up there, but they were prepared for that. They had different lifestyles, different, just prepared differently because they were raised in that. People nowadays are neither ready psychologically or physically to deal with something like this. I think people...
Cope, stand by with me here. Drumjaw just said his application is loaded, and he needs to know the number I called, which I don't recall offhand. Stand by. Let me bring this up so I can get the JMR number, and I will just shout it out. It's no secret. I'll just shout it out over the air here.
Yeah, I put the main number in the chat room just now, so he can try
for Just Measures Radio Network.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I don't need to do that. Well, let's see if he can get through on that number then.
But while we're waiting, the people in Phoenix are going to experience the same thing, because it's no easier to live in 125 degree weather for 6 months at a time than it is 20 to 30 below.
Oh, we get that down here on the Gulf Coast. August and early September are the worst times, and you've got frequently 99% humidity and temperatures over 100 degrees.
Some people will be able to survive that, but there'll be hundreds of thousands of them that won't.
It is much easier. Now, our winters are relatively mild. Sure. It rarely gets below 20 degrees here during the coldest part of the morning and the hardest part of winter. And really, even freezes are somewhat unusual during the winter. But, down here we still have the high humidity, so when you get near freezing temperatures, people would, conceivably die down here, especially the infirm or the elderly, if they didn't have alternative heating sources. But again, it would be nothing like people in Illinois, Michigan, New York, Maine, especially in the densely populated urban centers.
Yeah, Las Vegas, Phoenix, it's dry and hot there, and you get down in your area. Several places in California. I mean, what started all this was, where is a good place to go? Some of the better places to go, right here where I'm at, is not bad, except for water availability. That's going to be a problem. The weather is survivable without all of that. But, we're going to have to do a lot of searching and toting here for keeping water in the house.
Well, fortunately, in most of the Southeast, water is not a problem. In my immediate area, though we do keep stores of water on hand, We have artesian wells in the area. We have quite a few freshwater ponds within a stone's throw of the property. So in the southeast, water doesn't tend to be a problem like it is in the southwest.
Hang on just a second. Let me get the another number here for Drumjaw. Let him try the 800 number. If that don't work, I'll get on my Skype. Well, he should be able to. Oh, this isn't a Skype number. That's why he needs Skype credit to call that number. This is a regular phone number. Try that one, Drumjaw. If that don't work, I'll go to my Skype. And you know what? Drumjaw, don't even use a number. Don't use a number. Just go in there. We'll need to do a friend request, and then you just dial Skype to Skype. We'll need to get you in the contacts, and you just go Skype to Skype, and that will work for sure. You shouldn't even have to dial a number at all.
It looks like he's on top of that. He just texted okay.
So he'll just have to send me just do a search there for Just Measures Radio. And I guess I could go in there and see what, if you used that for your call sign, or okay, where we get on. I have two drum jaws in here. I don't know which one of them's right. Let me try this and see what happens. Hang on, Doc. It's going to put you on hold. Let me see if this works.
That's fine. You see, his Skype is Jahdrum, J-A-H-D-R-U-M.
Okay, let me try that here.
And he just sent a request to Just Measures. Isn't technology fun?
Yes, it is. Okay, there. I got you there now. Let's see. Let me try this.
The person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable.
All right, I got you back. Let's see here. Keep messing with this here. Maybe we can get him to... Haven't got the friend request yet. I bet anybody that come in here first time listening to the show thinks we're about a bunch of hicks or kind of...
Well, and they might be half right.
Maybe more right than they think. Let's see. That's okay. We don't care what they think.
But after all this, as soon as you get Drumjaw on, just don't worry about telling me goodnight. Just go ahead and disconnect me so we don't lose him. And I'll go back to listening.
All right, Doc. Well, I appreciate your time. If we do lose you without being able to tell you goodnight, well, goodnight ahead of time. Let's see here if I can try something different on here. Let's see if I can do this. Let me call his regular number here, 217. All right, let's try this.
Hello?
There you are.
I think we've got it figured out now.
All right. Skype is an awesome tool, man. Once you get it all set up, it's very groovy.
I sure was hoping we were going to get this done.
Yeah, well, I think we got her now. How are you doing tonight, anyway?
I'm doing all right. I'm at work tonight, so if you do hear some radio traffic in the background, and if I just disappear, it's because I had to go real quick.
All right,
it's been a pretty slow night so far. So,
all right, we understand that. So, all right, well, you were going to enlighten us with your wisdom here about the shooting somebody that's about to commit suicide. And I think we all understand and agree that if someone has a weapon and a cop comes up and asks them, you know, tries to talk to them a little bit, and they turn the weapon towards the cop, obviously they're left with no choice.
Correct.
We get that part.
And I have to make the distinction here that, you know, we've got to take, you know, the totality of circumstances into consideration. Of course, every time we make a judgment call when it comes to deadly use of force, or any use of force for that matter. And I would have to say that we have to first of all decide, you know, what kind of weapon are we talking about? Are they threatening themselves with a knife? You know, are they threatening themselves with a gun? Because, of course, our use of force judgment call is going to be different depending upon the weapon that they have. As far as the knife is concerned, and you know, I have to stipulate, of course, I wasn't there on scene, you know, when the SWAT team pulled up and they were dealing with the individual that you were talking about last night. But I would have a hard time articulating in a justifiable use of force report why I opened fire on somebody who was, you know, they're threatening themselves with a knife when I was personally in no grave or deadly danger myself.
Exactly.
However, and on the outside looking in, you might think the same thing with a firearm. If they're threatening themselves with a firearm, how are they endangering, you know, the police officer's life? Well, there's two things specifically that come to mind immediately for me personally. The first thing is, when we look at, you know, the triangle of the use of force, you know, the decision making that we have to go through when we use force, you know, we look at the suspect's ability to cause problems, their opportunity, and the jeopardy that they're putting everybody else in, you know, that's in the immediate vicinity. You know, with a firearm, you know, that becomes a little bit different than with the knife. You know, they've got the ability, the opportunity, and obviously they've got ill feelings towards themselves.
Yeah.
If they're willing to, you know, kill themselves, you know, what's it going to be to them to take two or three other people with them? However, if they're pointing the gun at themselves, they're not pointing the gun at the police officers or, you know, people who are, you know, interested in what the SWAT team's doing on their street, it might seem on the outside unreasonable to fire on that person. But you have to think, if that person, you know, presses the trigger on themselves, is there going to be an unintended target downrange somewhere that bullet's going to go into? Is there somebody,
right,
you know, that's on the other side of the head? Is there an officer over there whose life may be put in jeopardy by that round not stopping, you know, in its intended target? So, you know, I'd have to kind of withhold judgment on the guys, you know, if that was indeed the scenario that they were faced with. The spokesman that you were reading, you know, the words that the department spokesman had said about it, I was a little confused as to the point he was trying to make. It basically, you know, the report made it sound as if, you know, if you are going to commit suicide, you know, we're going to kill you before you get the opportunity. And that to me just seemed really unreasonable. I think they probably could have taken a little extra time and figured out how they were going to articulate, you know, their intentions a little better before the press got a hold of that, you know, for sure.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that just seemed strange in more ways than one.
And then there's also the issue, as a law enforcement officer, there's also the issue of suicide by cop, of making you shoot them because they don't want to, or they don't want the responsibility, they're too scared, or maybe for some other reason, forcing you into that, which is a very, very bad thing.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and I know guys that, you know, especially down in St. Louis, we're not too far from there. you know, that I was in the academy with down there that have had to make those decisions, that have been in those sorts of situations. And, you know, frankly, it's not anything that, you know, a good, you know, an officer with a good, strong ethical backbone ever wants to have to face. I mean, it messes them up for a long time.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But once again, you know, it's something that you have to decide, you know, every time you put on the badge and the gun, or even for a, you know, somebody with a concealed carry permit, you know, a supporter of the Second Amendment that wants the ability to defend themselves and their loved ones. It's no less of a decision, you know, for those people too, because they may be faced with the exact same situation.
Yep. The mountain shooter put in there, and I'm not 100% sure I agree with this all the time. Certainly the law of self-preservation would be strong here, but he said the first law of being a Leo is going home at the end of the shift. I think that there are some exceptions to that. If I have to sacrifice my morals and values in order to go home at the end of the shift, then I think I need to change jobs or something.
Right, and if I recall, when I was down there visiting you, and you were driving me around in your truck, we kind of had the opportunity to talk about this, you know, pretty briefly. Today in the academies, you know, across the country, there's a very heavy emphasis on, you know, preservation of your life, and I understand that today's law enforcement is not yesterday's law enforcement. There are, you know, new and you know, very, very complicated threats that are out there on the street.
Right.
But if you look historically at law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty, you know, in the FBI studies that are put out every year on those numbers, you know, today in law enforcement, you are in really no more jeopardy, and even to some extent less jeopardy than the guys that were doing our job in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
There were, you know, the law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty has decreased in a lot of different categories, you know, today versus those days. And, you know, back then, police training, of course, isn't quite what it is now, but in a lot of ways, you know, there was probably a lot more positive aspects to the people who were graduating from law enforcement academies back then, simply because they weren't ingrained, or, you know, I'll even go as far to say brainwashed in some circumstances, to have a spirit of fear instilled in them, you know, to be afraid of the general population that you're sworn to serve and protect.
Right.
Now, go ahead.
Do you think it's a fear now, as you say, or is it more of a, what would you call it, us against them type thing, like a competition, or?
Right, right. I would like to say that it was, you know, as simple as being one or the other. You know, there are so many variables that are, you know, that we have to take into consideration as far as, you know, every different individual that graduates from the academy is going to reflect on their academy experience and the things that they were trained in a little bit differently. You know, you've got different personality types for officers. You know, there are some guys, obviously, who are coming out of academies and getting jobs just like any other job out there. You know, in 6 months on the job, you've probably got guys, you know, on the force with them. They're kind of looking over their shoulder, wondering, you know, how the heck did this guy, you know, end up with us? You know, whether it's, you know, minimum psychological screening, you know, or whatever the case is. But those people get out there and they make mistakes at a professional level in use of force situations, and it causes the entire you know, the occupation being a police officer to be looked down upon, because those are the cases that people hear about so often.
Yeah.
Then in law enforcement today, I'd say you've got three different kinds of police officers. You've got the guys that probably would have been better off, you know, joining the military at some point and trying real hard to get into special operations. And for whatever reason, you know, they probably weren't going to make it there either. So law enforcement was an easy fallback. You know, they're kind of the commando guys that try real hard to get on the SWAT team. And if they can't, well, then they throw a plate carrier and AR in the back of their car anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you definitely don't want those guys, you know, out on your streets. There's a problem with that.
Yep.
You've got guys that basically show up and they're doing the job. They hope during their shift they don't get into, you know, anything too serious. You know, if they do, they'll handle it to the best of their abilities and their training. But for the most part, they're not going out. They're not looking for trouble. You know, they're just there to do the best job that they can. And then you've got guys like me who, you know, take a very strong stand the other direction and try to, you know, it's the whole law enforcement officer between, you know, versus peace officer thing that I talk about a lot.
Right.
Yeah. We're trying not only to bring those guys in the middle, you know, more towards our side and retrain them to not, you don't have to be an aggressive police officer on the street with everybody you come into contact, because, you know, not everybody you come into contact is going to be a felon that needs to be treated like that. Yes, you're going to be in some of those situations, but not, you know, every 75-year-old grandma you pull over doesn't need to be dragged out of her window, you know, because she doesn't get her driver's license quick enough. The guys who are, you know, the police officer wannabe commando types, it's like beating your head against a wall. Not only do they not understand the difference between a peace officer and a law enforcement officer, but if you could get them to understand it, they wouldn't want to have anything to do with the peace officer side. Unfortunately, there's a lot of those guys who are graduating today's academies, and, you know, people like me, we've got our work cut out for us.
Yeah, and I think there was we saw an ad. This was for LA SWAT, and mm-hmm. it was directed towards all the special ops guys and Marines and whatnot that coming back, you know,
right.
out of Afghanistan, and their key point there was something about the effect, do you miss the challenge or do you miss the excitement or something like that? So they're kind of playing on their adrenaline highs, I think, to get them back in,
sure.
and they're doing this as a. I can see that if you're going into, okay, we want to. My name is Mr. Blackwater, and I want to. Recruit you to go back over to Afghanistan and do close protection on some dignitaries or something,
mm-hmm.
but not mm-hmm. not in Los Angeles, California, USA.
Right, and even in Los Angeles, with the crime per capita, you know, ratio that they have, you know, still not being quite as high as St. Louis's crime per capita or violent crime per capita. You know, they probably do have what I would call, you know, full time SWAT units. However, we get into an entirely new, you know, Pandora's box to open when we start talking about, you know, what are we using our full-time SWAT guys for? Are we using them for, you know, real violent crime situations where, you know, going in, kicking somebody's door in at 3 a.m. with a warrant is actually going to save lives? Or are we doing it because you've got some casual cannabis user who, you know, is really committing no victimless crime? And we're doing it for the sake of, you know, revenue generation for the court system and the local jurisdictions.
That's the big problem right there.
Exactly.
Revenue generation, no doubt about it.
Correct.
When they we've talked about, you know, fighting tickets and stuff. If you are going 190 miles an hour in a 35 mile an hour zone, you know, it's going to be hard mm-hmm. to get out of. You really are trying to screw the system over them. But if I'm going... If I'm going, you know, 65 in a 50 or something, you know, you need to get over yourself. I mean, it's
right.
It's
and
not.
There's,
if I didn't endanger anybody and I didn't violate your rights, you have no case against me. Did I lose you? Uh-oh. He may have had to dash off there real quick. Nope, he's gone. Let's see here. Let me try to call him back and see what happens.
Are you back?
There you are.
Okay, not sure what happened.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's say that I'm going to pull somebody over for 12 miles an hour over. You know, just because I initiate that stop does not necessarily mean, nor should it mean, that it's going to result in a traffic citation, you know, with a court date. A lot of guys do not understand that you can initiate the traffic stop have a, you know, a pleasant conversation with the violator. You know, I'm going to call it the violator.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you know, just have a conversation about, you know, why are they driving that fast? You know, show them your point of view. Hey, we've got kids out on recess. You just went through a school zone. You're at 12 miles over. You know, try to use some good judgment, you know, when you're right. driving around on the streets here in the village or in your city, whatever the case may be. You know, not every interaction has to end up in an arrest. Not every interaction has to end up in a citation. You know, I was trained, thankfully, by a lot of police officers who got their start, you know, in the late 50s, early 60s. And, you know, their training consisted of, it's up to the individual officer to apply the law, and it's a gray area. You don't have to take enforcement action on everything, nor should you. You know, there's a lot of times where good community policing comes out of having conversations with good, everyday, you know, law-abiding citizens who, for whatever reason, whether they're, you know, exceeding the speed limit by a mile an hour or two, you know, not wearing the seatbelt, talking on the phone while driving, you know, these things that are just basically it. You know, I would consider it my job to have a conversation with you and say, look, you know, this is what the and I'll just use the state of Illinois. This is what the laws in the state of Illinois are. You know, in the future, you may come across a police officer who doesn't want to have this conversation with you. Just bear that in mind while you're using the roads.
Yeah. And it's a shame that there's not more out there like you. I know probably three of them here in Arizona just like that. There was a couple of guys that absolutely refuse to give tickets for seatbelts. They just won't do it.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
And I think that they're right in doing that, man.
Right, right.
But anyway.
Absolutely.
Well,
I hope we cover the use of force to your liking, or
I think
is there
we
anything
did.
Else that you want? Okay, all right, fantastic. And now that I've got the Skype thing, hopefully we can have these conversations more often for sure. Now that I know how it all works,
it is definitely a great tool. I use it all the time. I use it every day for something. You can transfer
Absolutely. Files.
I mean, just there's no end to what you can do with it.
Well, good deal. Well, Cope, it was great talking to you again, and I'm already looking forward to next September when I want to be back out in your neck of the woods.
Outstanding. That'll be cool. We'll be looking forward to seeing you. We'll have to see if we can take some time, go out and shoot a little bit or something while you're here.
That'd be great. I'll be back in the chat.
All right. Drum Jaw sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cope.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, there he is. There's our, we finally got through to him, and I think he explained everything just as I would have, as I would have expected him to. He's a good guy. He's one of the several people that I know out of the JMR chatter that I've had the pleasure of actually physically meeting, which has been quite a few. I mean, I've probably met, hell, I bet I've met 30, probably, I just sit down and count, but I've met 30, 35 of you probably, something like that. And it's very cool. All right, we're going to have to take a short break here. And as I have changed my format a little bit, we're not doing the other breaks quite so much and putting a little music in here. So here you go. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Well, I think I finally found me a surefire way to forget. It's so simple, I'm surprised I hadn't done thought of it before yet. It's foolproof. Well, it's foolhardy maybe, but who knows. Anyway, here I am walking toward where the cold, dark water flows. All it takes is one dying and a burying. One dying and a burying. Some crying, six carrying me. I want to be free. Oh, I want to be free. Free from all this heartache and regret. And free from pining for the love I can't forget. The love that once was warm and then just somehow turned to hate. Made my life a prison from which there's only one escape. That's one dying and a burying. One dying and a burying. Some crying, six carrying me. I want to be free. One dying and a burying. One dying and a burying. Some crying, six carrying me. I want to be free.
Kansas with a ticket and again to see New York. I type 80 words a minute so your corporation let me go to work. I fetch paper clips and coffee, even help you dodge your domineering wife. Mr. Walker, it's all over. I don't like the New York secretary's life. In this building there's a crowd of guys with old familiar thoughts upon their minds. That's a lot of hands reaching out to grab the things that I consider mine. And the president pursues me even though he's old and hair of turning white. Mr. Walker, it's all over. I don't like the New York secretary's life. There's a flat in Greenwich Village that I took because the subway wasn't far. But a trumpet player's upstairs and below me there's a jumping all-night bar. And a frost of bitter cake, I have to share the place with bugs and big old mice. Mr. Walker, it's all over. I don't like the New York secretary's life. Sweetheart and personnel said I should give her written notice like the rest. So I wrote goodbye with my brightest lipstick right across her big expensive desk. You'd better call the Times and tell them what you're wanted at right back in classified. Mr. Walker, it's all over. I don't like the New York secretary's life. There's a greyhound at the station and a mom at home with open arms for me. Garden City's looking better every minute now since I have learned to see. And the boy next door don't know it, but come June he's gonna gain himself a wife. Mr. Walker, it's all over. I don't like the New York secretary's life.
I just hate stupid people.
It was over in a moment and the folks had gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have went on living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. Big iron.
All right, we're back. I put a, for some reason, I'm unable to, the pictures that I put in there don't show up as pictures. They show up as links. But check that one out. It says not nothing to do with guns, but it's kind of interesting. If you look at the greatest snow depths ever recorded for each state, there's a whole United States map there. And little dots on there, if you're able to see it, the little dots show you about where the about where that was recorded at. And some of them, in here in Arizona, it's 91 inches, and it's somewhere, that dot is right here real close to Sholo. It's right on the eastern side right there. It's real close. And New Mexico, that looks like it's probably up around Cuba or somewhere, 96 inches, 251 inches. I'm not going to go through every state, but it looks like the highest one is Washington State with 367 inches. No, it ain't either, California. And that is up somewhere in the vicinity of Mount Shasta, I guess. 451 inches. 5 inches in Hawaii. That's good. And then you get way over on there. You get into the, right in the dead center in the middle of the country there, of North and South Dakota, Nebraska, and whatever. The reason those aren't very much because the wind blew it all over into Montana and stuff, I guess. There's 65 inches, 73, 40, 44. And then back over on the East Coast, not too much out there. I mean, there's some. Let's see, where is New York? Because New York had some. There's some. Vermont, New Hampshire, 164, 149 inches. 119 inches, I think that's New York there. So, anyway, it's kind of an interesting map. I was looking at this here while we were messing around a while ago. And I don't know if that'll come up for you guys or not, but you might be able to look at your state. Get down into Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia. Down there we're talking 18 inches in Mississippi, 22 inches in Alabama, 18 inches in Georgia. That 18 inches is... I have to dispute that a little bit, because we had almost 2 feet down there in Atlanta when the blizzard of 93 came through there. So maybe that was a, of course we had some wind too, so maybe some of that was a drifting effect that we had in there. But anyway, yeah, Arizona is twice that, I think, of North Dakota, isn't it? Let me go back over here and find that here. 91. No, it's not either. It's not twice as high. Yeah. It's twice as high as Nebraska, 20 inches more than South Dakota, almost 30 inches more than North Dakota. So, I've heard people talk about that snow here in Arizona, and matter of fact, I talked to a guy in Pine Top year before last that said that he remembers waking up to what he called 10 feet. Obviously, if this was the official total, it's closer to 8 feet than it is to 10. But when you have 8 feet of snow piled up against your door when you go to leave in the morning, probably doesn't make a whole lot of difference whether it's 8 or 10. Probably doesn't matter too much. It's still a whole lot of shoveling. Anyway, let's get back over to our story here. Get back into the shoot to wound, shoot to kill, shoot to stop. You hear all the crap out there all the time about people saying how you should shoot. They claim in the comments a lot of these stories that you keep shooting until that person is dead on the old worn out tired theory that if the person is dead, then they can't sue in civil court. Well. You know, it doesn't matter if you're not in a state that protects you from civil lawsuit. It doesn't make a damn whether he lives or dies, because there's going to be somebody that loved him or liked him or even knew him, somebody that was dependent on him for financial support, some old gal that was married to him at some point that sees the opportunity to make a buck. It doesn't make any difference whether he lives or dies. It makes absolutely no difference. So put that out of your mind. That's just a stupid idea. Now, if you're in like a state like Arizona, we have both Castle Doctrine and Stand Your Ground. So it's pretty tough. If our shooting is ruled justifiable and we are in a in a place where we have a legal right to be, we cannot be sued here in Arizona. So I'm okay with that. I think that's a good thing. And then there's the issue. Well, we'll get to one issue at a time here. But if you look at what's the circumstances around the shooting? A person typically is allowed to use as much force as necessary to stop that threat, to neutralize the threat. Now, it doesn't mean you have to use the same force. It doesn't mean if they have a knife, you have to use a knife. It means you're allowed to use however much is necessary to neutralize that threat, regardless of what weapon they're using, or if they even have a weapon. But there's... If you can meet a non-lethal force attack, you can use one using a non-lethal weapon, non-lethal means. That could mean a stun gun, pepper spray, or whatever. And a deadly force attack with deadly means. Now, there are some exceptions to that, I'm sure. If you meet a non-deadly attack, how are you going to prove that exactly? A guy has a baseball bat and he's threatening you with it. He don't intend to kill you with it. Will it kill you if you use it? What is a non-deadly attack? If I attack a 75-year-old woman with my bare hands, where do you determine that this is a deadly attack or not? And is she obligated to use non-deadly force to stop me from doing that? Well, of course not. That's just stupid. And of course a deadly force, lethal force attack with lethal force. So in terms of time, you can only use deadly force for as long as that threat is imminent, or immediate is the term I'd rather use. And that is until it's stopped, until it's neutralized. So if it takes 5 shots to do that, but you fired 6, and they determined that 5 would have done it, then the 6th round would be considered excessive use of force. And probably doesn't qualify for justification in self-defense. But somebody's going to have to figure that out and prove it. So in the first 5, everything was fine and dandy, and the 6th shot gets you a murder conviction. Or, what would you call it? Negligent homicide or something like that. So, if the person keeps shooting, not necessarily to stop the threat, but supposedly to avoid civil liability, then every shot that they fired that was not necessary, if they can determine that through autopsy and eyewitnesses and whatever, then that's a murder or attempted murder conviction. Could be. So, and we hear all this testosterone-laden BS all the time in chat rooms and beer joints and wherever about, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, and they're not going to interfere in my house, I'm going to kill them. Guys, you need to stop it. If they're in your house, you're going to stop them. You're going to eliminate the threat. Eliminating the threat doesn't necessarily mean killing the threat. The threat, if your guy is down on the floor with a severed spine and his arms don't work, he's no longer a threat to you. And shooting him until he's dead is going to be a very bad thing. Now, in saying that, also, there's times when a woman may actually get away with that when a man cannot, simply because of the emotion thing. So Doc, that's right. That's with the ammo being what it is, be assured that there will be no warning shots, but there won't be any extras either. But so if you were to, there's people that I get this question almost always in several of the classes that we do, and that is, well, why didn't you just shoot the wounded? Why didn't you shoot him in the leg? Why didn't you shoot the gun out of his hand? Why don't you shoot him in the arm? Shoot him in the elbow? Why don't you shoot him to wound him? You don't have to kill him. That is also exceedingly dumb. For you to have the notion that you might somehow be able to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to glass breaking and people screaming and bright lights all of a sudden and someone moving quickly down the hall towards you and you're going to be sharp enough to shoot that guy in the kneecap, I can tell you, you're either damn sure lucky or probably the most accomplished self-defense shooting person in the world. No, I'm not going to say marksman because that won't be all marksmanship. Hell, I can hit a knee coming down the hall. But under those conditions, probably not. It was probably just luck. Either that or you are simply a damn liar. And that may be the case. But you don't ever purposely... Well, I won't say you won't ever. As sure as I do that, somebody's going to call in and say, well, my uncle did this and that. Did. Okay, maybe he didn't. But generally speaking, you don't shoot to wound. You shoot to stop, regardless of the conditions. If you've put a bullet in somebody, then you have shot them. Deadly force has been used. Whether or not the people die or the assailant dies on account of it is beside the point. You have still used deadly force. Shoot him in the leg, shoot him in the chest. From a legal standpoint, it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference. You've used deadly force. Now, whether it was justified or not depends on, you know, where you took your, where you got your training, where you took your concealed carry class, how much you've studied, what you've heard, what you've, your own personal values and morals as to whether that was justified or not. The only variance in that would be if they actually died. You still use deadly force, but if they died, then that could change the outcome a little bit. If they rule not in your favor, quite obviously the consequences are going to be a little more severe if they die or not. But, anyway. If you are one of those that has claimed, either before the shooting or afterwards, that you only, if they say you only are going to shoot to wound, or you only did shoot to wound, then that opens up the door to the state saying that you lacked good faith, subjective fear of imminent death or grave bodily harm necessary to justify your use of deadly force. So if you, what they're trying to say here is that if you were to intentionally shoot to wound, then chances are pretty good that you weren't really in that much, in that kind of fear for your life. You really weren't in that much danger. If you had the opportunity, if you were able to make that decision, number one, and then use the proper amount of skill that it takes to actually perform that task, chances are pretty good that you weren't in that much danger. You probably had other options at that time, is what they're kind of alluding to here. So, if you actually feared death, then you would have shot more decisively, you know, whatever, two or three rounds to the thoracic cavity or whatever, not just to piss him off worse, with a bullet to the kneecap. Now, a bullet to the kneecap's not necessarily good, even if you could make that shot. And like I said, the kneecap's plenty big enough target, but if it's moving and it's low light and you're scared, you've just woken up out of a dead sleep and your vision's not completely clear, now you forget it. But if you happen to mash that trigger in such a way that you accidentally shoot him in the knee, you need to follow it up right now. Shoot him to the ground and make sure that he is not... when I say shoot him to the ground, I don't mean shoot him to kill him. I mean shoot him until the fact that he's in a position where he's no longer a danger to you. If he's still standing on his one good leg and drops his gun, then you have no further justification in shooting. If he drops his gun, or if he even doesn't drop his gun and turns around and walks away, you probably have no justification in shooting unless, as he walks away, he's going right straight to the living room where your wife and kids have gone while this is going on, or something like that, or through, you know, through your daughter's bedroom to get to the outside or something like that, then that's a different story. But the other thing is, when he, if you were to shoot that one shot and he just happens to go down, chances are pretty good that he's going to retain that handgun, because we have that propensity, what do you call it, the reflex, kind of, when you're holding a baby and they've got their little fingers wrapped around your finger or something there, and somebody slams a door or sneezes unexpectedly or something, you know how they grasp real quick and get a good stout grip on you. Well, we're going to do the same thing. When something like that happens and you go to fall, chances are you're not going to open your hand up and let the gun fall out. You're going to do exactly the opposite and squeeze it tighter, which could even result in a discharge of the firearm, depending on the type of gun it is. So a lot of things to consider there. If you do that and they drop the gun, fine. If they don't, you could actually even accidentally be shot even if he didn't want to, because of I use it all the time in my classes. I can't think of it right offhand. But anyway, let me get a drink of water and see if that helps. Clinch. There you go. A drink of water helped. Cleared my brain up. Yeah, that clenching reflex. There you go. That's what I was trying to think of. So that may require you to shoot again, because he goes down and still has a hold of the gun. So stand by 1 second. Hey, sweetie, love you. So then there's the whole thing that says, you know, never say you were shooting to stop, only shooting to kill, is not exactly true. It's of course, it's better to phrase it that way, but you were in fear for your life, and let's leave it at that. If someone is trying to imminently, or as I say again, the better term to use is immediately kill you, not imminently, but immediately. The law says you're allowed to kill them first, if and only if it's necessary to defend yourself from that attack. That's the law, and it's permitted to justify it. Even if you said, well, I shot in order to save my life, it's not going to lose you. Stand by just a minute, we have something going on here. Concretin, is that you calling in here in the middle of the night?
Yes, sir, it is. I wanted to let everybody know I'm okay.
We wondered.
My computer crashed big time, and I mean, I couldn't get anything on my cell phone or nothing.
Wow. Yeah, everybody
so
was a little concerned for you there. Couldn't get a hold of you.
Yeah, you ever get the blue screen on your computer, Cope?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not smart enough to do anything about it when it happens.
that's exactly it. And so I figured I'd just give everybody a call and let them know I'm okay. I didn't know what to do, and I was trying to fix it, and I was in the middle of a rainstorm here and everything else. So well, just want to let everybody know nothing's bad. I just lost everything.
All right. Well, we're glad you took the time to let us know. Everybody was wondering.
Okay.
All right, Gonk. Thanks a lot.
You betcha. Take
care. Good night.
Good night.
All right. There you go. For everybody that's worried about concrete in there, he is okay. He's had some technical difficulties, apparently. It sounds like he's got it all fixed up, so he'll be back with us here when his next scheduled show comes up. We're glad to hear that. All right, let's get back on. Before we get back in here, let me jump over here to the chat room real quick and see. Hey, Kojo just joined us. There you go. Good to see you. All right. All right, let's get back to our story here. Or to our lethal force discussion. So if it's you want to try to avoid the thing of what somebody else may refer to or allude to as he only killed him because he wanted to, not because he had to. That's what somebody could. This is a very complicated thing, very slippery slope to get into, is how you you need to watch your mouth. If you're already prone to a little bit of diarrhea of the mouth to start with, running off at the mouth there a little bit, when that adrenaline starts flowing and the fear that you're going to get in trouble, you fear you're going to lose your job, it's going to affect your relationship, your family, your freedom, your financial stability there. All of these things going on can cause you to start running off at the mouth pretty seriously and talking about a whole bunch of things that you ordinarily wouldn't have said. And we spend a lot of time on this in some of our classes trying, because this is a, you know, it's not so much how to shoot. Most of us can hit the thoracic cavity of a humanoid sized target at typical self defense distances, you know, 3, 5, 7, 10 yards, whatever it may be. Most of us don't have too much of a problem. That's a pretty large target. And majority of us can do that pretty well, even when we're scared. But it's the why and the where and the if, some of those items that you definitely need to consider. And anybody can say, you know, everybody talked about Bob Mundin before he died. Some of you know who Bob Mundin is. He's was an exhibition shooter and an awesome individual. He was so freaky fast. He was kind of like Jerry Michalak. But and people say, boy, I'd hate to go up against him. Well, if he didn't have all of his fancy rig on and he had a 5-shot 38 and inside the pants holster with a vest over it and was in some of the same conditions as you are, would he still be that incredible, awesome phenomenon to go up against? Well, maybe not. It's not all about marksmanship. It's not all about speed. It's not all about the two of them combined. It is about, you know, knowing if and when you should shoot also. There's a lot of things that go in with this. And that's the hard thing to get across to people, is making them understand in some cases that they may not know what they don't know. And I think I've probably talked about this a time or two before when we've had people in the class and they, they only take in the class because they have to get their permit. And they sit back here in the back and they tap their pencil and they look around. And then they, for some whatever reason, they happen to listen for a few minutes and the pencil tapping stops. And they scoot up in the chair and they listen and you start taking notes. Those are the guys who, when the class is over with, you say, you know what? I had no idea. I've never thought about that before. And usually it's when we get to the point of actually taking a life, if you have to do that. And, you know, you sit around in the beer joints and the garages, the hunting camps and stuff, and talk all this crap. But you may not know what it is that you don't know. And to convince these people that have been shooting for, you know, 50 years, that there still may be something they need to learn before they get involved in a lethal force confrontation, sometimes is like pulling teeth, like nailing jello to a wall. It's just not going to be happening. It's pretty tough. So, well, all right. There you go. I was going to play another song, but I'm not prepared to do that. So, while we still have the Skype opened up here and everything, or if you guys have any questions, concerns, or comments, gripes, whatever, well, lay them on me, and we'll see what we can do about it. Or I may just shut the show down and say, heck with it, I don't want to talk about it. But I'm going to be working on I'm getting a new email list put together, an actual list, a real email list. And we've got the new website, theshootingbench.us. The forum I do not use anymore. I left it up there because there is so much good information up there. Lots of stuff about colloidal silver and weapons and radios and alternative healing stuff and just a lot of good information. And I haven't been to that thing for quite a while, but I keep it because if you're interested in preparedness and survival type information, man, there is a ton of it up there. So, and I may open it back up because I've got people coming in with this new website and email list and stuff, and I may get that going again, just for old time's sake. I don't know, but it works. The information is still there. It's not going anywhere. You just you may not don't expect to talk to anybody on there too much. But. All right, well, guys, I've had about all the fun I can stand. Remember, tomorrow, Friday night, is the Liberty Lounge. Nothing is going to change. It's still going to remain at 2 hours. On the rare occasion that I'm not able to make it, we'll get an archive loaded up for you. But the two-hour Liberty Lounge is going to be a permanent fixture unless something dramatic happens. But starting Monday, we're going to be going to 1 hour. And that's going to be happening for unless there'll be times when we're going to run over because nobody follows me, so we can do whatever we want. But plan on an hour, and that is because of the time change. Everybody else is still going to be at the same time that they were. Me, I'm going to be at 11 o'clock if I go 2 hours, so 11 o'clock my time. So. I can do that for a while, but to do it 5 days a week, week after week after week, is going to get pretty. I've done it, you guys. I've done it before. Did it back with the previous network, and I've done it with this network before. I'm just not going to do it this time. I've got things to do, places to go, and a beautiful wife I need to spend a little time with once in a while. So that's the way it's going to be. All right, so we will see you tomorrow night for Liberty Lounge. I appreciate it. Drum Jaw, I appreciate you joining us and sharing your wisdom with us. And I'll tell you, buddy, I wish that there were more cops like you out there. I know a few like you, but damn few. Not nearly enough, I can promise you. All right, I'm out of here. We'll see you all tomorrow night. Take care.
travel reads the card of a man. A knight without armor in a savage land. His fast gun for hire heeds the calling wind. A soldier of...
Okay, that about wraps it up for another PM edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me every Thursday night for 2 hours of 99 and 44 100% pure gun talk. Good night.
A chest knight of silver is his badge of trust. There are campfire legends that the flames men spin.